Hi everybody, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome you to the weekly podcast from the Banter team. This week we're talking hospital food. For the last year or so, chef and owner of Dublin restaurants Bon Appetit and Cleaver East, Oliver Dunn, has been engaged in a campaign to improve the food available in our hospital wards. He joined us at Banter during the Bloom Festival in the Phoenix Park to talk about the reasons for his activism, the campaign so far and the road ahead.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Banter here at Bloom. My name is Jim Carroll. Thank you all so much for coming in. Evelyn Cusack, the forecaster, was here yesterday. She said it'd be pouring rain by 2:30 on Sunday. So as you can look out, it's not raining. So Evelyn was wrong. OK, so you can't believe the forecast. I'll tell you the story, first of all, about why we're doing this panel. A while back, a friend of mine had a heart attack. And he's a very fit man. He's kind of a little bit older than me. Very fit man. Cycled everywhere. Swam everywhere. There's heart problems in his family. So he ends up in the high dependency unit in Vincent's. So we all went in to see him, you know, as you do. So you go in to see him. And he's fine. He's recovering, you know. And then I think it's around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. His food came around. And remember, he's in a high dependency unit in Vincent's. This is a serious... He's been through a very serious incident in his life. And the slop he has been served, you know... Where I come from in Tipperary, you wouldn't serve it to cattle. You know, it was horrific. So when we were putting together these talks for Bloom here this weekend, hospital food was one of those issues that kind of came up. And it just so happened that this gentleman here, Oliver Dunn, has already started a campaign about that. Could you please give a warm welcome to Oliver Dunn? Let's start, Oliver, with your background, just so people kind of know where you're coming from.
I'm a chef restaurateur. I own Michelin star restaurant Bon Appetit in Malahide, and I've also a restaurant in Cleaver East in Temple Bar in Dublin City Centre. So that's really the background of my involvement in food, I suppose. And how this hospital campaign started was my wife had suffered from ulcerative colitis for a long, long time, for 10 years. And 3 years ago, she was very, very ill and went in for major surgery and was in hospital for months on end. And since then, she's sort of been in and out of hospital months and months at a time. So that meant I obviously was the visitor and sat by the bed and witnessed what goes on in hospital on a daily basis. And I suppose last September, October, was when I suppose this campaign really happened. And it was really based, I suppose, out of frustration. Frustration from when you're looking at someone you love literally not eating and deteriorating in front of you, or on a special diet, or have been fasting for, you know, a long period of time, and then the first day comes around that they're allowed to eat and this food is presented in front of them, and it's just like absolute morale dropped, you know, the tray is just pushed away and nothing's eaten just because the plate of food in front is badly cooked, unappetizing, looks terrible. And it's not just that. You witness it in the whole ward, you're alert. Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, without sounding selfish, you're obviously sitting by a hospital, you're bored, so you sort of look around a lot and you're seeing everyone else doing the exact same thing. And then the aunties and the cousins and the uncles and the mammies and the grannies and the husbands and wives all bring in and smuggle the food in. So it was really out of frustration. I couldn't understand why, you know, and I mean that from literally... Why? It doesn't make any sense to me. There's no reason for it. It's nothing to do with, you know, me being a Michelin star chef, and that's something, you know, which has been said a few times in the press, oh, it's easy for you to say. I'm talking about the very basics of you're serving someone corned beef with mashed potato and, I don't know, some gravy. The corned beef doesn't have to be burnt and dry like a bit of leather that you can't eat. The gravy doesn't have to be congealed to the plate that has been poured on the plate about 5 hours beforehand and then regenerated in an oven. And the peas don't have to be bullets and dehydrated on a plate. So there's nothing wrong with corned beef, mash and peas. It just is the way they serve it. Yeah. So that was really it. And I tweeted a photo back in September. And the photo was of half a boiled egg, a handful of grated red cheddar, all dry, completely like the bag of red cheddar you'd see in a deli counter that must have been open for about a month, and it was just all completely dry, and one slice of ham, and that was the dinner served, and that served at 4:30 in the evening in hospitals. Okay, and the reason why that's done is because of the staff aren't there in the evening time; they all check off and gone home, so all the food is prepped during the daytime, and then depending if it's a cook chill environment, and a cook chill means basically that the chefs cook all the food, blast chill it all down to cold. They plate the food cold, put it onto plates, and then the plates are brought up to temperature in a regeneration ovens. And what that is basically all the food is completely plated and up on ward level in the kitchens. They would put it into this and they would set it for maybe 70, 80 degrees, and then the food will take 45 minutes completely plated to come back up. And that's the cook chill method. So the Mater Hospital is a cook chill hospital, and all hospitals around the country are different. The regular method then is the cook and serve, like you would imagine in anywhere else, where you would literally cook food hot and serve it. So it just came from that. I just couldn't understand a half four. You get this great, like, who's ever eaten a handful of grated cheese, a half boiled egg, you know, and that's your dinner, and you get nothing else till 7 o'clock the next morning. And malnourishment is a massive, huge problem. 1.4 billion euros is spent in Ireland a year to treat malnourishment and rehydration of patients in hospitals and care settings and care homes all over the country. So it's completely logical to me, sitting there looking at someone who's malnourished, has to go through then like weeks of getting nourishment packs put into them, or 5 or 6 days, because they're not physically strong enough to go through the surgeries they require to get better, because they're too weak at that time. They're too weak, and the food that's coming up isn't being eaten. So it's just a whole circle. Just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
So I tweeted this picture anyway, of, as I said, out of frustration, and an awful lot of people sort of jumped on and said stories of, yes, their families and friends, because everyone knows people in the hospital setting who's witnessed this.
Yeah, I think actually on broadsheet as well, they took it on the photograph, and everyone started like sending in more photographs, and it was just this kind of like complete and utter run of misery.
Yeah, like, I got to the stage where I was actually getting photos sent from hospitals in Japan. So if you're ever sick, you should go to Japan, because the food looked amazing. Okay, like, it was stunning. You want to see it. But yeah, it was crazy, you know, and that was it. And the mad thing was, the very next night, I'm sitting in the hospital as well. Now, I nearly want a disguise on me at this stage. And I'm sitting in the hospital, and the exact same meal, it was a Sunday night I sent the picture, the exact same meal on the Monday came up, two nights in a row. And I just thought, this is outrageous, you know. And then the next night, I remember after, it was a bit of dried fish with white sauce on the top of it, and some peas. And I just thought, it's, you know, again, why? So the campaign started then. And I suppose what I'm trying to do is literally improve hospital food, improve nutrition, taste, and look. And look is huge when it comes to food. I run restaurants. You eat with your eyes. So you can make... I'm not talking about putting herbs and all this sort of stuff on it. I'm talking about making basic efforts, you know, little things. Don't pour the gravy on and put it in an oven for 5 hours beforehand. Maybe heat the food up and pour the gravy on just before it gets served. Absolute basic things within the parameters of what the hospitals currently have, within the staffing levels that they currently have, within the budgets that they currently have. I volunteered my time to go into the hospitals to actually improve hospital food.
Okay.
With the team that's currently in place.
Okay. Have you been involved in any sort of food campaigning or activism before?
No. And that's the thing, you see, you know, if I haven't had personal experience, I wouldn't be sitting here today. And that was what drove all this. It was literally frustration and personal experience. And it takes things like that in life. When you see someone you love going through something like that, it gives you that. I don't know what happened. It just got hold of me. And it was really, I'm very passionate, and I'm passionate about food. And it's just, I just know it can be changed. I know very easily, with very basic steps, it can be changed really, really easily. And the more questions I ask then, the less sense it made.
Give us an example of that now.
Example of that. Why do different hospitals in Ireland, one was, why do they all serve different food? So I'm thinking of a professional then as well. You know, like, why do we give it to the chefs to decide what they cook? And I'm not mean that, because a lot of hospitals aren't chefs at all. They're absolute basic level caterers that come in who have no catering experience whatsoever, and they decide what's served with no cooking skill, with no ability, and in some cases maybe no desire. They decide what the patients are served. So that just didn't make any sense to me. Why would you not get, okay, like in a restaurant setting, if I have 30 dishes on a menu, I'll look on a monthly basis what sells, what doesn't sell. If what doesn't sell, I take it off the menu and I never serve it again. Because what's the point? Customers don't like it. In a hospital setting, it's on a 4-week cycle. So the food is just sent up to the patients every 4 weeks on a 4-week cycle. So if you got your dish of whatever it is, a chicken pie, if you eat that pie or not, nobody knows that. That's not monitored. So that pie is sent to you, tick, we have served Jim. Nobody checks that Jim eat that, and Jim's malnourished, and Jim's, you know, struggling and dying and getting weaker and weaker in the bed. That doesn't matter. And then if 80% of the patients didn't eat it just because it's just not nice, or for whatever reason, it's still served. the next week, and it's still served the next week, and it's not looked at on a practical point of view of doesn't make any sense.
But surely, like Oliver, like, isn't the case that there's someone in the HSE who's got oversight of nutrition, or is there a nutrition expert who's monitoring all this? Obviously not.
No, there isn't. So each individual hospital, and this is again over the last year of looking into this, each individual hospital is run differently. So there's some are HSE run hospitals, some are not, and we're talking about the acute hospital division, which is basically any hospital that treats patients. So all separate caterers are done. So some hospitals will work closely with a dietitian or a nutritionist. Some won't. Some the head chef will decide it. Some doesn't. And there's no common ground. And again, that was one of the things that I didn't understand. The Mater Hospital told me they have €4.10 per day to feed a patient, and that is breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. €4.10. That's what they claim to have. If that's true or not, I don't know. Beaumont Hospital told me they have 10. Why is that? That doesn't make any sense to me. And who decides that, if that's the case? Who decides that? Is that a case of the budget goes to each individual hospital for the year, and someone internally in the hospital decides, well, we're actually going to spend €4 on our patient's food here, and another hospital will decide because that person could have more interest, and we're going to spend 10? I think that's completely wrong as well. That shouldn't be the case. So I think it should be a case of, let's get a recipes done up, highly nutritious food that can be served, tasty food, and that word is never used. Tasty is never used. Like, that's irrelevant. It's just a case of the nutritional value is there, but if it tastes of rubbish, they're not going to eat it. And the example I sat with them, and I said, well, that's well and good. I can send my kids to school with a big school lunchbox full of Brussels sprouts and cauliflower. It's going to come back full. So what's the point? So it's about giving people food that they're going to eat. And sometimes nutritional content doesn't really matter. And in a hospital setting, sometimes it's about eating calories. And that's where this gets diluted as well a little bit. And the press and the media can dilute this story as well, because they throw in the obesity into this whole argument. And that's a completely separate issue. It is a separate issue, because the frozen chips, the HSE have bought X amount of frozen chips and frozen sausage roll and frozen pizzas and all that, and they're serving it in the hospitals, and there's uproar over it. I think that's nonsense. I think that's getting away from the real issue. There's absolutely no problem with serving frozen chips, frozen pizzas and frozen sausage rolls at hospital. Some patients just need a calorie intake, and some patients only eat frozen chips and frozen pizzas, and if you don't serve it to them, they're not going to eat anything. So that's people jumping on their high horse, but they're actually damaging the real campaign of actually producing just good quality edible food. And usually in a hospital setting, you've got your menu card will come around the day before, and it'll be 3 or 4 choices. And you would tick off what you're having the next day. So, it could be beef, chicken and salmon. And you pick off what you have next day. All I wanted to do at the start was to leave 2 of the choices. That could be your frozen chips and pizzas. And put 1 healthy, nutritional, really tasty dish in there. And give people the option. Like, they don't serve fresh fruit in hospitals. Give people the option of having something. Because there is people who have no interest. I can come up with a lovely dish for a hospital setting. But if you don't like it, you don't like it. Yeah. And we all have individual tastes. So you can't just railroad healthy, nutritious food in hospital and expect people to eat it. It's not going to happen.
Right. Okay, so let's take it back then. So you go in, you've seen the kind of the food that has been served in the ward your wife's in. You see what's happening around it. So what was your first next step then? Who did you approach? Was it the hospital, or did you go to the HSE, or did you go to a minister?
The first step was, literally, as I said, the tweet. That took legs. Then I was contacted by loads of the media, from newspapers, everything else, and I gave loads of interviews. And then it went forward, and then someone asked, what do I want to do? And naturally, I said, well, I want to get into a hospital. I said, I'm volunteering my time to get in. And first of all, I want to be invited into the hospital to have a look, to work in the kitchens, because the only way you're really going to understand, there's no point to being arrogant saying, oh, I'm going to change everything. The only way you really know is go into a hospital, work in the setting, see, because at the end of the day, hospitals are understaffed. There's loads of things going against hospital. There is budget restrictions. So go in and work in first of all. And by working in it, I'll have a real understanding of what it's like. And then I'll be able to go, well, how about we recommend to do this, introduce a new dish, and gradually get an understanding internally of the hospital. So I was willing to do that. And then I wanted to write a report and present the report to the Minister for Health, Leo Varadkar, and hopefully then turn it into policy change. So I'm very conscious that this whole campaign can turn into, I'm very conscious of not allowing it to turn into Oliver the Busy Fool. and that is go into a hospital, work away, change this, this and this, make this and this recommendation, and then when Oliver walks out the door, it's just, yeah, see you later, mate, and nothing's ever changed. Yeah. And that's what will happen unless this becomes policy. And for that to happen, we need the acute hospital division to back this and get behind this, and that's Liam Woods is the director of the acute hospital division, so he needs to weigh in behind this. The health and wellbeing service is behind this at the moment, but it's actually the wrong sector to be behind us. Leo Varadkar, I met with Leo Varadkar back in December, and I explained what I wanted to do, and Leo Varadkar was behind us, and he gave the go-ahead for this to become a pilot scheme. And that was the first, and then he has then and his team have went off to talk to the HSE to get me access into the hospitals. It's now June tomorrow. I still haven't got in.
Okay, so that's kind of like, let's say, like 8 months on from when this began?
8 months on, yeah. Now, there's been talks. I was invited in for the third of the hospitals, and I have the third of the like walk around, this is what we do, and it was all very impressive and great. But to actually get in and make any real change, and then to make sure that the change is going to be followed through in the long term, that's the thing. So currently at the moment, we're working on that. But there has been huge change since, so there is a good thing. There is, like, ICWA has come on board, and they are... they're basically looking at nutrition in hospitals. Yeah, yeah. So in April this year, they've actually come out and said that for the first time ever, health and nutrition has been looked at in the hospital setting. And that's mad to think. For the first time ever, a government body has actually gone to check health and nutrition in the hospital setting. Isn't it just hard to believe? You'd imagine that would have all been done. You'd imagine there was a government body overdoing that. So late this year, they're going to go in and inspect hospitals around the country and enforce standard and quality control. Ever. So that's great. There is talks now of me going into a hospital, and it looks we've put a proposal in a couple of weeks ago to finalise it, but it's all your cards on the table, is this happening or not? So it's looking promising at the moment. And there is, because the media attention that's been put on it and a light's been shone on it, people are starting to talk about it. And that's what this is about. And that's why I'm here today and doing all the other interviews and all that sort of stuff, because if it's just me banging pots and pans behind closed doors that no one knows and no one hears, this is going nowhere.
Of course,
this
yeah.
needs public pressure. This needs people to get behind it. This needs, you know, all walks of the media, you know, whether it's television, radio, print media, people's social media. It needs loads of pressure. The more pressure put on this, the more chances this is going to happen. And time's running against me a little bit, I think. And why I think
what do you mean by that? Do you mean people's attention spans, or is there something else?
No, well, what I directly mean by that is I don't think Leo Varadkar's going to be Minister for Health for much longer. And that's what's going against me. So we have, like, and will the new minister come in and back it to the same extent he has? Yeah. But in the end of the day, he can only back it. He can't get me into the hospital. So
what's what? Like, okay, so basically, you said you put all your cards on the table, so you're kind of hopeful you're going to get into a hospital.
We're kind of hopeful now, but everything takes weeks. You know, like you'd say this is what you want to do, and you wait 2 months for him to come back to say we've actually got your email. So it's a long process. I was warned it was going to be a long process. By God, I didn't think it was going to be this long just to get it. Like, I was literally thinking in my head when this started in October, right, well, I'll get Christmas out of the way and I'll get into a hospital in January, February when I was quiet, my own professional industry, and that'd be great. And here we are, you know, so you're guaranteed it'll be next Christmas. Come on, Oliver, in you come, you know. But, so it's a huge thing.
Okay, so I'm very curious about this. Like, I mean, so you haven't been in the kitchens yet. You haven't been hands on in the kitchen yet.
I haven't been hands on. I have been in.
You've been in. You've done the tour. You haven't been hands on. So from where you sit, what do you think is the problem? What do you not so much the problem of not getting you into the hospitals, but what do you think is the general problem when it comes to nutrition? Because you mentioned, I'm very curious about the fact you mentioned earlier on about those figures, those budget figures of €4 and €10,
yeah.
10 euros per patient. I mean, I'm not in the catering business. I'm not in the food business. But are they high figures? Day low figures? Is it possible to do kind of like large scale catering for a large number of people with those numbers?
Yeah, of course it's possible. You know, €4, obviously, the €10, it's absolutely possible. Like that, I was actually surprised with that figure. I thought it was fairly high. When you think of it yourself, you can go to the shop and you can buy a chicken breast for what, maybe 160, 180. So that's your main course done pretty much with a bit of vegetables. So €10, loads, it's plenty. I think what it comes down to is quite simply, again, there's no standards. There's no one in charge to say, that's not good enough. Like, the reason why restaurants, and I can say, the reason why my restaurants serve good food, and talk myself or any other top restaurant in the country, is because I insist on the standard. That's why. If I didn't insist on the standard, it would just be left to ruin. So that's what it is. Like, a fish rots from the head. So if there's no standard in place, if there's no one checking that, you know, the catering team delivering food to the right level, the right consistency, that everything's cooked right on a daily basis and that it's served, and then are the patients eating it, are they enjoying it, is it beneficial, it's not going to happen. So there needs to be a policy put in place that that checks. There needs to be standardised recipes, which there's none. So if you and I were both workers in a hospital and we chicken curry, you can make your chicken curry, I make my chicken curry. That should not be allowed. If you were working in my restaurant, I hand you a recipe and I'll say, that's the curry you're making today. Yeah. And you'll say, well, I want to make this. And I'll tell you, well, go somewhere else and make it. And that's what would happen. Because that's you need a standardised recipe packs. That needs to be rolled out. That needs to be maintained. And yeah, it's not done. I'll give you one good story. I had a discussion with one of the nutritionists in one of the hospitals. I won't say where it was. And I asked her a question. And they told me about the whole how how do you come to get your dishes and how do you decide the dishes? And whether it's true or not, I don't know. If I'm being really honest, I think they were telling me porkies, okay? But what they said is, you know, the chef comes up with his idea of his dish and then he presents his dish to me and then it goes to the nutritionist and the nutritionist goes and checks the nutritional content and values of each individual item and then it goes to a taste panel and the taste panel check it and then they go through this absolute amazing amount of tests, okay? Now, if they do, they all should be put
to sleep failure.
Because what's produced is terrible. But that's what they claimed happens. So I said, really, well, obviously I said I took the girl's word for it. I said, very good. So I said, so here's an argument for you. So if I was to produce a dish today and you were to produce a dish today and we both presented it to the nutritionist in one of these hospitals and your dish was 5% more nutritionally valuable, so I might have an extra couple of grams of protein or a bit of reduced fat or a little bit less salt, but mine was 10 times tastier. So therefore, more patients would eat mine, more patients would enjoy mine, which would reduce hospital stay times, which would save tons and tons of money, which would get passed. And you know the answer is, the one with the extra 2% of protein in it, the one that doesn't get eaten, the one gets sent back. So it's completely illogical.
Okay, so like while you're waiting, obviously, to go into the hospitals and get this program underway, I mean, someone like you is probably doing a lot of kind of research into like, you know, how kind of catering works. Like, have you kind of come across examples of kind of large-scale catering? Because this is what we're talking about. We're talking about the hospitals, it's large-scale catering. Large-scale catering, which is producing tasty foods at a budget, at a good price.
Yeah, see, you don't even have to. Large-scale catering, you can switch that anything. So the two big hospitals in Dublin, being the Beaumont and Mater Hospital, to my knowledge, they've got 600 beds, okay? There's hotels with more rooms. I've cooked banquets for 1,000 people, for award ceremonies, with a team of chefs as well, and the food is stunning and top drawer. So it's not about 600 beds isn't a lot of food in a catering section. It's not. It's like, it's quite easy, and you're batch cooking everything. You're not doing individual portions. You're doing one pot of curry for 600 people and plating it up. It's fairly basic and fairly easy to do. So can it be done? Absolutely, 100% yes. And there's loads of catering. Like, they might have a limited amount of chefs, and that's another point, I suppose. Yeah. Different hospitals have different amount of chefs. So the Mater has 5 full-time chefs, where Beaumont has 12. Why is that? Yeah. And that's, you know, why? Who decides that? Who dictates that budget? And then it could be a hospital down in Mullingar could have 12 chefs serving 140 beds.
Yeah.
And it's just, the whole thing just doesn't make any sense.
It strikes me, as you're kind of like me, outlining how the campaign has gone so far, Oliver, and your plans for it. That, I mean, there is a template as such in place for it. That was kind of like Jamie Oliver's school dinners, when he did that a couple of years ago, and he went into kind of like the secondary schools in the UK, and he kind of like saw what was going on. He kind of saw the food there being served, and he could kind of come up with a revolution. And like, are you interested in that kind of model? And you also said something very early on, because you said you're very aware of the fact that you could go in, do all these changes in the hospital, but the minute you walk out, like, see Oliver, and they revert to type.
Exactly, yeah, and that's it. So that's why it has to be a policy change. It has to be implemented. So the buzzwords that I'm getting are proposals and you know, recommendations. So that is another word for nothing. Okay, so anything that comes up as a proposal or a recommendation never gets followed through, and I'm not interested in that. It's not something I'm going to dedicate time, because I know it's never going to come true. The reality with hospital food improvement in Ireland hasn't never been done before, but in the UK, in the NHS, there's a document called 20 Years of Hospital Food Failure. And that document, it started off with Lloyd Grossman back in 1991. And since then, Lloyd Grossman has been campaigned for 20 years with a multitude of other catering experts, celebrity chefs, and for 20 years the NHS put in policy changes and recommendation changes, and they implemented two a year pretty much every year, and they're all, as I said, under them buzzwords, and nothing ever changed. So I'm well aware if it's not made absolutely 100% policy that this is what we're going to do, roll it out across the board, and my intention is to come up with dishes, write recipes, write recipe packs, write methods, write things, and present it and say this, and have it up on a website that then the caterers around the country in Ireland can go to that website and use it. And it has to be, the guidelines has to come from the HSE to say these are the recipes we're cooking, and everyone cook from these recipes, and take away the individuality, take away Jim's chicken curry today, because it shouldn't be like that. It should be, people are in hospital for healthcare. They're not in hospital for food. But yes, the food they're being served should be edible, because what happens, the knock-on effect is huge. It increases bed stay by, I reckon, up to 4 days per patient for any sort of long-term illness. And then, you know, all the HSE gets slammed, obviously, in the beds and the hospital waiting beds. But 1.4 billion on malnourishment, yeah. It's a complete no-brainer to me.
Okay. Last couple of questions then, Oliver. You know, and like, just for people who come into the tent late, it's Oliver John. He's talking about his campaign for better hospital food. Last couple of questions, Oliver. And like, you're a chef, so obviously you talk to other chefs as well. I mean, is this something that your kind of peers were aware of? And like, I mean, have they heard horror stories from hospitals about food? And more likely, have they heard horror stories from the kitchens in hospitals that about food as well?
Well, I haven't actually spoke to my peers, other chefs, about this. This has pretty much been a personal sort of campaign. I haven't actually, because at the moment we haven't even got underway yet, but I haven't spoke. But the public have, I get about 3 to 4, at the very start, and this happened first of all, late last year, I was getting maybe 10 emails, letters a day, pictures of horrific food being served, you know, across the nation, and it was all horror stories. And everyone has a horror story, as you describe with your friend, the food they're serving. Everyone has them, sorry. So it's one of them things, like I say, it's everyone knows hospital food is terrible. Everyone knows elevator music is boring. It's one of them things we all know, but no one's ever done anything about it. And I just think it's time that we just look at it, and because I really believe it's so basic. It's there's no reason for us. It's just a case of a little bit of effort, a little bit of standardization, and just to make sure someone in there goes, that's not good enough, do it this way, that's the way we do it here. That's all it takes.
Okay, excellent. Well, I hope we have you back at Bloom 2016 to talk about the success of the campaign. But right
hopefully,
now,
yeah,
Oliver
absolutely.
Dunn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a million to Oliver for joining us, and thanks to Rosa Shocklesy and all her team at Borbia for their work making banter happen at Bloom. This podcast was produced by Banter podcast series producer Tanya White. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate us and spread the word. Tell your friends about us, recommend us on your favourite social media network, leave a review or rating on the iTunes store, and don't forget to subscribe. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news where we're up to at Banter, bloominthepark.com for all Bloom news, and you can follow Oliver Dunn on Twitter. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.